Today is Tuesday, September 11th, and I hereby welcome you to the Tuesday Morning Esports Talk. I'm DT and I'm the host of the show. As always, thank you very much for joining me. In the last few days, we had two places of action, London and Montreal. And we're going to talk about both the Faceit Major main qualifier, as well as the DreamHack Open of last week in this episode. So, without further ado, let's get started. And at first, I want to talk about the Faceit Major main qualifier, of course. We will start with that. And first team I want to talk about is Liquid. And it's quite interesting to me to see that it's actually the only team that is considered in the top tiers of Counter-Strike that hasn't played a tournament before the major main qualifier started. So this was the first tournament after the player break for them. And there was actually an interview with Twist, done by HLTV, of course. Who else would have done it? And they asked him about that, or asked him about what the team thought of not playing a tournament before. And he said that they actually wanted to go to Zotac Cup, I think, Zotac Cup Masters. But after they bombed out of Cologne, which they did, yes, that's true, they decided that they just wanted to go to boot camp before the tournament started, before the major started, and they prioritized that over going to a tournament, maybe, having the chance to win money, of course. They'll take up Masters in the end. This is actually something that he said as well. Looked a bit lackluster, would have been an easy event to play, not to win, of course, but would have been an event that they would have had good chances to win, and there was a lot of money involved, so it's a real trade-off to then prioritize bootcamping instead of going to the tournament where, yeah, you can maybe smell the smell of money already and in the air when you go there. But Liquid decided against that, and yeah, well, for now it played, it showed, and it was a good choice. So they went 3-0, and they only really had problems against Vega Squadron. Which was amazing to begin with, that they went 2-0, and had Liquid in this advancement map position, where the winner would go on to the legend stage already. And yeah, in the other matches against Optic and Hellraiser, they didn't really have any problems. But like I said, except the cage game against Vega Squadron, they had an easy road to the legend stage. And when I talk about actually another team that has had a great performance in one of the last two tournaments and now hasn't made it to the major, maybe this topic or this conversation makes a little bit more sense. But yeah, like I said, no boot camp for them, but Twist actually said that they had about 70 scrims and they won 75% of them. And yeah, confidence seems to be back up after the horrendous showing that they had in Cologne, which makes a lot of sense. And I have to commend them for that they made this choice. We don't really know what it means in the legend stage, because now, of course, the other teams can study them in these three maps that they played. But yeah, for now, like I said, they did a good job. Made a good choice for now. And yeah, you can't really argue with someone that, I always say that success gives you, makes you right. So if you have success, then you're right. If you don't have success, you're wrong. And Liquid is right in what they did. They have success now. They have had success in the first 3 days of the main qualifier. So can't really argue with that. And with that, I actually want to move on to the next point. Now on to the second team that went 3-0 in the Swiss format of the main qualifier. And maybe this is a team that wasn't really expected to do that or to be in this position. when you looked at the lineup from before, maybe Liquid was more expected to do that than, yeah, Ninjas in Pyjamas, who did that and in the end weren't really supposed to be there, I guess, especially when you go 2-0 and then you face Astralis to, yeah, take the spot or to decide who will go 3-0, and then you play what is like you play one best of one, which showed us Counter-Strike of like two or three maps even when you go 54 rounds in total with the enemies. And yeah, you go and you win 28-26, I believe. Yeah, don't really expect that to happen that often, and it actually happened a lot more than this only this one time. So yeah, in other matches of course with the scoreline, but NIP, yeah, they made it through. They beat Astralis to get there, which is pretty much as legit as you can get. The other matches were against VP and against Ty Lue, and yeah, VP of course crashed and burned out of the tournament. But yeah, Ty Lue was legit as well. They made it through in the end, so not really anything to, yeah, to be mad about. But yeah, the Astralis win, of course, in that best of one. Yeah, I can't really say anything more than that's really legit. And they, like I said, played three maps. And yeah, in the end, it was Lecro who came up with almost a 1.5 rating throughout all these three maps. He's actually the top player for the main qualifier in ratings. Yeah, and yeah, it's not really anything you can say to discredit the team. They played really well, like I said. Ty Lue and Astralis are the wins that actually matter in that case, because yeah, VP is playing versus VP and that on that stage, I guess, and if I'm especially in these in these 3 days, you're expected to win that. And yeah, they did what they had to do in the on the first day, but it's going to be really interesting to see after the performance that they showed in Stockholm, where they went to the semifinals and now going 3-0 at the main qualifier. It's like a little resurgence of the team with Lecro as the in-game leader, and yeah, they seem to be winning out on the trade that Fnatic and NIP have done. For now, at least, and it wasn't really the case that I don't think that many people expected NIP to get stronger out of that, especially in comparison to Fnatic. But that's the way it is now, and I think that's quite interesting to see. And I think that seeing NIP is always a good thing for the scene and for having a team that has so much tradition. Being good is always something that build some narrative, except yeah, in comparison to having the other teams that have not so much history in the scene or in the game, be at the forefront of things. There's something about traditionalism and having something that you can relate to for a long time is a good thing, I think. And yeah, it's not really that important, but it's a good thing to have that, I think. And it's not something that is discrediting anything. So especially when you have good CS. So NIP showed good CS. They knew what they were doing. I think that's a way that you can describe what they did, or how they played, how they made sure that they came through in these three maps. And I to add to that, maybe last point is that Forrest, after day three, he actually said that they're not satisfied at all, and they want to go further. And I think that they did some they said something like that, similar things like that after the game, or after one of the games. I can't remember which. There was an interview with Pala, and they said that they actually can feel like they can go quite far. I think it was said that they can go to the finals at least. That's maybe a bit much, but But I think that the confidence is a good sign, and yeah, it will be interesting to see how they move forward from that in the next stage, with teams now waiting for them that were able to watch a lot of demos about them now from this main qualifier stage, and of course DreamHack Stockholm. It's something that of that Liquid, for example, the fellow 3-0 team, doesn't have as a problem against them because they haven't played a tournament. I said that already a few minutes ago. Yeah, and now I guess on to the next point, because everything has been said about that. NIP and Liquid are now through with the 3-0, and two with pretty distinctive situations, and it's been interesting to going to be interesting to see both of them move on from that. Next up, I'm going to be talking about BIG, Berlin International Gaming, and they also went through to the Legend stage, but they had a little bit more problems moving on than the other teams that I've talked about before, because they went 2-2, going to the last best of three against Optic. And yeah, when I look at the matches, or when I look at the matches they played, I immediately think that they got a bit lucky, to say the least, I guess, when you look at the way that they have drawn the opponents, because they played against Renegade. They won against Renegades, and Renegades haven't really done anything noteworthy at this tournament. They played against Vigor Squad and lost. They lost against Complexity as well. Then they had Gambit, and yeah, Gambit to save themselves from elimination, and I think that there's not really much you can say about Gambit as well, especially in the last few months. They won a major just a year ago, but I guess everyone knows what has happened to them since then, and yeah, you can actually call yourself lucky, I think, if you get them in a stage like that. And then, of course, they played against Optic and they did well. You can't really take anything away from them there. They played this best of three. They took it on, and they beat them in two maps. So they were actually able to win both Dust 2, which is their pick, of course, and Train, which was Optic's pick. So they didn't even take it to Nuke. Let it come to Nuke, and from that side, of course, they did a good job in securing going through the new legend stage. But yeah, I think that they got lucky in that sense, but that doesn't discredit them, and I don't think that they don't deserve to go through, because when you see Big play, and I think that they're going to be even better in best of threes going forward, because you can actually see that they put a lot of preparation into their game. You can see that they you actually saw that with the bug that has been yeah, I think it's almost a year ago as well, that they broke this gentleman's agreement between all the teams, and they used it. And I think I might be wrong about this, but they were one of the first teams that could actually, they would actually display this in game, which then from the outside, of course, always looks like they were one of the first team also to notice that this would be useful in a game. So what I actually wanted to say with that is that BIG is always seems like one of the teams that is putting most preparation into their game, or they know the mechanics of the game maybe even better than most of the other teams do. And I think that this is maybe something that is a bit sad when you think about what they have been able to accomplish in the last, I don't know, time. But which then actually points to the fact that they are not at the same or at equal skill level with the other teams, which is a bit unfair maybe, but which could also, yeah, which also makes a bit sense when you think about their performances in the last, I don't know, or the tournament performances that they have shown. Of course, they did well in Cologne. There's nothing to take away from them there, But other than that, there's not really anything that where you think, okay, this is a tournament where big played out of their minds and they did a really good job moving through the bracket and stuff like that. There's not really anything that comes to mind for me at least. Maybe I just don't know, but yeah. Nevertheless, I actually bashed them. I bashed in quotation marks, of course, bashed them a little bit more than I actually intended to do here. Because I think that they deserve to move on. I wouldn't really take any team from the bottom eight and say, okay, this is a team that should have gone into the legend stage in front of big, at least from the 5 days of action that we saw there in London. There's maybe one team that I will actually talk about them in a few minutes as well. Actually alluded to them earlier as well, that I would actually think that they are a better team, maybe, than Benin International Gaming, but they haven't shown that. So it's not really like they deserve it more than Big does. So, yeah, much ado about nothing, I guess. Big moves on, Big deserves it, and on to the next point. Next team I want to talk about is Vega Squadron, the CIS side, who actually made it through to the Legend stage as well. And they did that by going 3-2, just like Big did. And I think in a more convincing fashion in that case, they surprised a lot of people. Not many people were actually giving them the credit that they deserved after the performance that they showed. Like I said, they went 3-2. They played against Spirit in the first game, and they were actually down like 3-12. And after the CT started a Mirage, and it was like a Falcons Patriots situation where. I think most of the people, I can't take myself out of that because I was actually thinking the same way because I thought, okay, there's no chance in hell that they can come back from that, but they did. They actually won 16-14 in the end. They only gave up 2 rounds to Spirit on their own T side, so that was the first time that they exceeded my expectations. And it wasn't the last time because then they won against Big in overtime on Train. They lost against Liquid in overtime on Cage, which was a crazy game. And I think that when there would have been a few minor switches in outcomes, this would have been Vega Squadron's game. And they would have been gone through 3-0, and it would have been the first team that I would have actually talked about in this episode. So there was another time where I thought, okay, seems for real. They can actually do that because they don't really play Counter-Strike like the other teams play Counter-Strike. They are just they, and I think that this is something that will, yeah, this is double-edged sword because I'm not really sure how the teams in the Legend stage after now watching them for 5 days will actually be able to counter that, and if they find a way to do that in that case, not really running into the things that Vega sets up for them, then I think that then there won't really be a problem for the team that's waiting for them. But if they can't find a way to do that, then yeah, they are going to walk through the whole tournament field if they feel like it, because they are not going to waver from their tactics. I don't really think that they actually know how to play the game differently. So, which d doesn't have to be a bad thing in that case, because you have to be confident in the playstyle that you choose for yourself, especially when it's a playstyle like Vega Squadron, where you kind of set your mind on doing something and then you just do it without feeling out first or being like, okay, let's set up this strat, let's go for these default positions, and then let's see what the other team does, and then we will actually adapt to what they are doing in the case that they kind of, yeah, negate what we want actually had planned to do. They don't do that. They go for the setup. They think, okay, we want to do this, and then they do this. They don't really waver from that, and I think that can actually be a good thing, but it can also backfire quite quickly because the teams that prepare for you can actually prepare for that, just knowing that this is going to happen, It's not that easy, of course. It's not really that easy. Not that Vega Squadron can be compared to Lionel Messi in any way, but when you also know what Messi does, and you aren't really able to stop that. So, like I said, bad comparison in that case, because I don't think Vega Squadron isn't the Lionel Messi of CS:GO teams. I don't know. So, but still, they can actually move quite far up the tournament brackets if they are able to, keep playing that game, and the other teams aren't really able to adapt to that. But we will see that in a few days, right? Because major action goes on in 2 days already. So, it will be interesting to see what they will be able to do, because they played four best of ones. They played a really many a huge amount of rounds in these four best of ones, and in the end it was against North where they were able to go through. They won the series. There was a best of three series. They won it with 2-0. They won on Inferno, North's map pick, and then on Mirage their own map pick. And they, like I said, went through, and Chopper had a great performance. The whole team actually had a great performance in that game. Not really fair to just point out that Chopper had a great performance, because the other players did well as well. Not as well as Chopper, of course, but other than that, they had a great performance in that series. And it's going to, like I mentioned before, it's going to be interesting to see them now move on to the legend stage and see how they can adapt, or how the other teams can adapt to them, and maybe who wins this chicken and egg game. So on to the teams that haven't made it through to the legend stage, and I want to start with North, the DreamHack Masters Stockholm winner. And yeah, I don't want to be too high on my or I don't want to get too high on my own supply here, but I think that I actually said that last week, that I don't really see that North, I don't know, moves on from that win in similar fashion, and makes sure that they get through to, yeah. Oh, I believe that I said I don't really see them going too far into the major, or having too much success there. And when I said that, I didn't really actually believe that they wouldn't move on from the challenger stage, but now here we are, and they didn't. They went 2-3 in the end, after going 0-2 after 2 days, then beating both Virtus Pro and I think Rogue in some crazy, I don't know, overtime, crazy triple overtime, I think, on Inferno. But yeah, they. What I actually want to point out here is the thing that Sam DaYoung, in an interview after day two, said, that he said that they pretty much knew everything North were going to do. And this, of course, is something that, was to be expected in that case, because they played a lot of maps in Stockholm just a few days ago. Before the tournament in London started, so it makes sense for the teams to have studied them. And he said that they, when they knew when the A executes would come, then they would go when they put three on A, and they knew when they were going to go fast, and they were actually prepared for all of that. I don't think that you can do that and know that for every round, but it's still. It's still an interesting thing to hear from a CIS region team like Spirit, where you don't really expect them, at least I didn't, I don't know, to do that much. I don't really want to say that I don't think that they would take their job seriously. I really don't want to say that, and I think it kind of came off like that. But if there's a team like Spirit out there in the CIS region, a team that in the end doesn't make it through after going 2-0. No, of course not 2-0. But after they went two and two, and they don't move on from the legends, from the challenger stage. Excuse me, these names. When you hear it from a team that doesn't move on, and you have eight more teams waiting in the legend stage, that haven't played before now, and yeah, I don't think that anyone would argue with me that Spirit isn't one of the best teams in the world. And they were actually able to I don't know, decipher this code or crack, I don't know, the preparation code in case in that North case now. Yeah, you really, I don't know, think about what you would actually be able to do now as North. But yeah, that's going to be North's, I don't know, problem to figure out. Now afterwards, I think MSL came out with criticism onto the tournament organizers' face it, of course, and he actually then afterwards said that this is not an excuse for them dropping out of the tournament, and I don't think that he actually meant it that way. Maybe I'm a bit naive that way, but I don't really think that he was bashing them just because he went out. He actually stated that he would have done the same thing if they were able to go through to the next stage. And yeah, maybe that's a bit bullshit, but you never know in that case. You have to take him at his word. But yeah, maybe this also had something to do with this in particular, the problems that North had. But it's always a weak argument, I think, that in both ways you can actually say, okay, this is they had sound problems and they weren't really able to play the same way that they were used to in a working environment. But then the other way you can say, okay, every team had to have every team played under the same conditions, so every team had the same problems that North had in that case, so this kind of neutralizes itself. But you would actually only say that, yeah, I don't. You would actually only say that if you, I don't know, if you don't really know these nuances, because I think that some teams can adapt to things like that easier or more easily than other teams can. So of course every team had to play with the same conditions, but when these are conditions that are less than ideal, or if these are conditions that are actually I don't want to say that everything should be perfect, but if you have problems like that in game that are actually not supposed to be there, because the game is then not working properly. In the case of a sound bug where you can't hear the steps of someone close to you or your teammates or the enemies, this is something that is not intended to be there, and it's not it's actually a huge problem for the working of the game. So it's not like your, I don't know, your mouse pad isn't large enough, or I don't know, something like this, where you or you have a table that is set up a different way than it is at home. So I'm not really saying anything about that, which is then of course going to the ideal conditions part still, because these are the ideal conditions that you play with at home, because you set them up the way you want to have them. But then at the tournament there's a different height and stuff like that. But when you talk about sound cues that are not there, which are an integral part of the game, and they are missing, then you can't really say that, okay, this is the same for everything, everyone. Of course it's the same for everyone, but like I said, one team will adapt to that with that differently than the other one does. And if you then play with these conditions, then you have team one playing against team two, or team A playing against team B, and you then team A beats team B. You can't really say that team is better than team B in that circum of course in that circumstance that's the case. But if the circumstances were there were proper circumstances with without any problems from the game side, then you have a whole different scenario because, like I said, the conditions apply to both teams, but I'm repeating myself here for the last time, I promise. One team is going to handle that differently than the other one is. And I don't really think that this is indicative of skill, but just of adaptability, which is also part of course, of the success of a team. But they shouldn't be needed or shouldn't be necessary to adapt to something that isn't working properly. That's all I wanted to say. But I actually am talking about North now, and I'm talking about the fact that they aren't moving on to the legend stage after they won DreamHack Masters Stockholm, which is a pity for them. And I think that no one really expected that to go down. I certainly didn't, although I said that they were going to have problems at the major. But yeah, they went out earlier than I expected them to, and I think many people expected them to. So back to the drawing board for them, I guess. Yeah, they will be able, in quotation marks, to watch the major from home, and be able to attack in the next few weeks, next upcoming events, where they will be able to, I don't know, show that this wasn't only a fluke win at DreamHack Masters Stockholm, and they will be able to, yeah, prove people that are saying that this was only one-time thing wrong. And to finish off this episode, we will lose a few words about the DreamHack Open Montreal 2018, which have taken place over the course of the weekend. And I think, first of all, I guess, it's a really interesting tournament. I think it's a really, I guess that this hasn't been the plan of the tournament organizers. Maybe it has, but I think that was a good showcase for the teams that are actually, yeah, that they missed out on of course, the major, obviously, or else they wouldn't have been there. But especially when you look at teams like Kinguin and Ence and Imperial, you have the three teams or three of the teams that are, of course, not at the top tier. Or else they would have been at the major, like I said. But you can see for all of them, they have a lot of potential. You saw that with Ence and in Cologne, where they had great performances. You saw it with Imperial throughout the many closed qualifiers or qualifiers in particular, in general, where they played a lot of great matches online. And now with Kinguin, you had them at the Zotac Cup Masters. Just a few weeks ago, and you had them there in the final as well against MIBR, where everyone thought Optic to be in the final. Yeah, Optic versus MIBR was a lock for many people. There was actually one guy that had to bathe in orange juice just because he was so sure of that outcome. But Kinguin made it into the final, where they lost, of course, against MIBR, as we all know. But now they went to the final back again against Ence, and they won in the end. They won $50,000, and they gained a lot of experience through that. I think that for all of these projects, like Kinguin, like Ence, it's really important to get these reps under your belt. They are long-term projects, I hope for them, of course. I hope that they have this long-term planning in mind because these are teams that have a lot of potential that they just need to find their groove and maybe get a lot of get more experience. With the case of in the case of Ents, you have Alu, of course, but then you have four players that have maybe played a handful of maps and at offline events each, maybe a bit more, of course, with Cologne. Now with Ents, but other than that, they haven't really played anything offline before that, and now they have to get into these tournaments, have to get into these qualifiers, make sure that they actually get to these offline events where they can then gain this experience. And when you play in these situations more often, then you will actually be able to have more confidence every time you play and every time you show up at these events. So I think that the DreamHack Open Montreal for each of them has been a great opportunity to make these. Yeah, to make these experiences and to gain a lot from that. Yeah, all three teams that I mentioned, Kinguin, Ents, and Imperial, were able to showcase that. Yeah, I think that this is also, like I said, a great point for them. They played good Counter-Strike. Kinguin in the end, in the final, played very very well. Did a good job. We had Rallen. Leading the scoreboard or leading the board for Kinguin at least the ratings stats I don't know stuff he led that he led in ADR yeah and on the other side we had Alu of course who tried to put Ents on their back but on his back but he wasn't quite able to do that for all but. I don't think that the result really matters in that case because of the points that I made earlier. The most important thing is that they play these matches. They get into these situations where they then afterwards are able to say when they get to these tournaments the next time and the time after that and the time after that they will be able to sit there, sit in a situ be in a situation. I don't know in a certain round or in a certain match. In a certain position, I don't know where they will be, and then they will say, "I have been in this position before, and I know what to do now." Or I don't have, I'm not that nervous, to be in that position again because I know what it feels like or what it felt like before. Now, maybe a personal story for me. We played. I played FIFA. I don't know everyone who listens to this podcast. I don't think that. Anyone who listens to this podcast knows that, but I played FIFA competitively in 2000. I started playing in 2009, and we actually had the ENC, it was called before it was the, I don't know, European Nations Championship, I think, from ESL. And we played the first round, we being Greece, played the first round against Switzerland, and I actually remember this was my first competitive game in that scenario. Where there were, yeah, I think let me just say it like this: it was the first game where the stakes were that high. I played, like I said, competitively before, but not really that high stakes. But I actually noticed that in that case, where on the first map, first match, in that case, I couldn't really move. I was quite nervous in that case. But this one match actually helped me. In order to get then into the second round of the tie against Switzerland, and I played way better. I was way less nervous, and this only improved with time. And I think that in the beginning you have a very steep learning curve, and I think that this is what all of these teams are going through now. And the more they do it, the better they get, the less anxious they are when they are on. And these in these situations, so yeah, this is important for them to get to these positions. I think, and actually the analyst has mentioned that as well. For Kinguin especially, you have by winning these tournaments, the most important thing by winning that is that you get invited to more tournaments, where you get either invited to the tournament itself or to the close qualifier for the tournament, which is actually almost mostly it is harder to get to these than to get. Than to perform well at the tournament because when you are at the tournament, you don't really have anything to lose, and you are offline, and you will actually get the experience that you want from these tournaments either way. And yeah, I've talked a lot about this now, and I think that I'm going to repeat myself if I keep talking about it. So I will cut this right here, and I just wanted to say that, yeah, it will be. I think this is my favorite phrase, and I actually noticed that myself. It would be quite interesting to see how these teams move on from that. I think Taz said it in his post-match interview after the final as well. He said he doesn't know what this win will do to the team if it gets them a huge advancement in that area of getting the repetitions in, or if this only gets them. A few steps ahead, and he actually said that they will take one day break and they will go back into the grind afterwards. And I really like that. I really enjoy hearing that. And I think that this is the only way to move on from that. And I personally am looking forward to seeing both King Win and Dance at the next offline event where they will be able to participate. And with that, we arrived at the end of this week's episode. You know the drill by now. If you have any questions, suggestions, or other remarks, please let me know on social media. As always, all the important links are in the show notes of this episode. If you want to voice your opinion about this podcast, I would really appreciate a rating on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening to this right now and you're able to give a rating, actually. Any kind of feedback, either in rating form or via social media, is highly appreciated. Finally, thank you very much for listening, and I will catch you guys next week. See ya!